Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, our guest is David Smith. He's a licensed massage therapist and owner of Monta Massage in Boise, Idaho. With a background in personal training and corrective exercise, David blends relaxation, soft tissue management, and mobility training to help clients move and feel better. His approach, which he calls conscious bodywork, focuses on both the tissues and the nervous system. It supports recovery, managing chronic pain, and building long-term resilience. He was inspired by the graceful strength of manta rays as he encountered them while living in Hawaii. David's work emphasizes calm, fluid, and powerful movements. Today, we're going to talk about beyond pain relief, conscious body work, and mobility for long-term wellness. In this episode, we're joined by David, founder of Manta Massage, to discuss how conscious body work and mobility training can help people with chronic conditions like spondyloarthritis reconnect with their bodies, reduce pain, and restore movement. We explore how slowing down, moving intentionally, and supporting the body's natural healing capacity can lead to more sustainable physical and mental outcomes. David, welcome to SpondyCast. How are you?
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm doing great.
Okay, I love the manta ray stuff. So I love manta rays and eagle rays. They're my favorite when I'm 80 or 90 feet under the water. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you landed in the seat at Manta?
Yeah, it's been quite a journey. I'm from Ohio originally. And you are too?
Yeah, whereabouts?
Just south of Cleveland from North Olmsted, Ohio.
Oh, I'm from Geauga County.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Neighbors.
Crazy. We are neighbors. Okay. We're good people on the first minute. We've got it. Okay. Yeah, so you're from Ohio. Keep going.
Yeah. And ever since growing up there, I just really wanted to see mountains. That was kind of my big calling early in life. And so when I turned 17 in that summer after graduating, I just got on a Greyhound bus and moved out to Utah because it sounded like the most Western thing I could do. And then started going to school there at Weber State University. And originally I was going for automotive technician. And that was inspired by essentially having an interest in assessment and diagnostics. In the automotive program, it was a lot of technician work. So you'd plug in, you know, a code reader, and then it would tell you what's going on with the engine and the computer and how they're communicating. And I found that to be the most interesting and fun thing. Then I got a job doing it, and it was all oil changes and tire rotations and sweeping up the shop. And I was like, this is not actually what I want to do. It's the other stuff that I want to do. Coincidentally, I got hired as a personal trainer at the University Fitness Center. And that's when I started getting into corrective exercise. And that kind of opened up the gate for me as far as working with the body and kind of investigating how that same interest in assessment and diagnostic, how could that work on the personal level between people. So I did a lot of that with personal training. And what was most interesting to me and most rewarding was taking somebody who's like, maybe just getting into fitness or just getting into their body for the first time. And they might have a program they want to do, something they found, you know, online, and it says, okay, you got to do squats. And I would look at them before they could start any kind of program. They'd have to go through this assessment, and I'd look and see, do you have the prerequisites in your joints to do a squat? And if they didn't, we would go into more of a corrective kind of program as opposed to let's just make you squat until you squat.
Yeah.
So that was really cool.
I love this. I don't mean to derail your story, but it's such a cool thread. The way I think we're kindred spirits, by the way, because your thread for me, the way I perceive it, is you've always loved the process of measure and manage, improve, and the ability to be like preventative and predictive. Like it's basic, and I have a fascination. I've been in probably 500 factories around the world, and I have a fascination with kind of like you. I want to do the work that improves things. And it's a process, right? And you were, sounds like from your earliest days, you were born to be like a growth mindset guy. And it's hard with the body, I think, especially with a chronic disease, where, like you said, listen, I wanted to do squats 10 years ago, and I walked with a cane and barely got out of bed 3 hours a day and weighed 104 pounds and was in pain all the time. And I remember the first trainer I met with, his name was Scott, and I had him for years and years. Our first visit, he's like, we're going to do the sled. And I was like, what? And he's like, but if you can push it 50 feet today, you might be able to push it 50 tomorrow, but we're going to work on how do we build to it and get you where you're pushing whatever you want to push. But yeah, no, I super appreciate your story. And then you landed in, we only got to college. So, and then you fell in love and started Manta. You fell in love with work. Is that the punchline?
Well, yeah, I essentially, I had a friend who was a trainer, one of my good friends, Sam, and he had an interest in massage before I did. And then he invited me to go with him one day to shadow at a school. And the school had a pretty heavy kinesiology and physiology component. And I was really attracted to that because, like you said, if we have, you know, a system, a complex system, it's really hard to approach that like the layperson approaching fitness. It's like fitness is this huge, all-encompassing kind of thing. There's diet, lifestyle, actual movements, engaging the body. Like, how do you approach that complex system? You need a way in to kind of understand the mechanisms at play so that you can start to impact it and grow in the way that you're trying to. So with personal training, I had this kind of gross anatomy level of understanding. There's a little bit more involved when you take the certifications. You have to know some of the physiology, but I wanted to understand more at like the tissue level. I was feeling that kind of inspiration. So then this door opened up to go check out this school, and they were like, yeah, we focus on the kinesiology and the tissue and the biochemistry. Like, how is this happening? How is massage affecting the body? As opposed to just learning, this is how you do a Swedish stroke and this is what a deep tissue movement is. It was, why are these things affecting the body? What is the mechanism at play here that's communicating? And what is it communicating to the cells and the tissue? So that was like, oh my goodness, this is exactly what I'm interested in. This is what I want to get into, is just the next layer of understanding, because with that understanding, then we can make informed decisions as opposed to just guess and check, you know, see if this works. Oh, that hurts. Not going to do that. Okay. Yeah. This feels good. It's like, it can take a long time to find the thing that works if we're just, you know, shooting in the dark. So,
yeah. And is that a school that you started with? Is that the school where you ended up doing your work?
I went there. I got my license through that program and then started my first business pretty much right out of school.
Amazing.
Just because I knew this is what I want to do. And I was working at the student clinic for a while. They have a professional clinic attached to their school. So I worked there and became the lead therapist there pretty quickly. And then decided I could do this on my own and kind of get my own clientele, people that responded to the type of approach that I have, which is not the most typical, just come in and massage and feel good for an hour. It was a little bit more involved than that. So I was like, if I had my own practice, I could market it to the people that have a similar interest in working on multiple fronts, and also people that want an understanding, not just they want to feel better because they pay me money. I want people that are invested in the process of learning, so that we're learning how to function or how to improve the function of their body together, as opposed to me just being the authority. It's like, I only know what I can measure, but you know how you feel and you live in the body. So together we can kind of create a plan. So that's kind of the trajectory of how I got into the Manta world.
That's so beautiful. And I love that because I think what you're doing is the body work, but also offering what is offering people the opportunity to partner on a better outcome for themselves.
Yeah, exactly.
It's beautiful. I love your approach, like just your whole vibe. Can I ask you a weeds question? Get in the weeds.
Not of course, me, yeah.
Get in the weeds. the person who started the school that you did your work at, do you know what their philosophy background was that brought them to a place where we needed massage to look at the act of massage as something that can drive system level change in an individual? Like, were they yoga, Buddhist? Like, I'm very curious.
Yeah. I'm not sure for the person that started the school, because I wasn't really, there's just a lot of instructors. So it'd be individual people. My one instructor, Roger Olbrot, he's still in Utah practicing. He was really, he kind of gave me a lot of momentum to think about things differently. He was mostly a myofascial instructor. That was kind of his main technique that he taught. But his approach to it was just so different, because he had this ability to be so gentle, but so effective in communicating to the tissue. And it's not, you know, deep tissue where it's just no pain, no gain, that kind of philosophy. He did not believe in that. And I don't believe in that either, mostly because of his kind of philosophy on how we work with the body. So I think it was just individual instructors that kind of instilled a different mindset in me as far as like, what is the place of manual therapy in somebody's, you know, wellness approach.
Yeah, that's beautiful. So for folks living with things like spondyloarthritis, which I'm imagining you're quite familiar with to some extent. So, or any really like chronic inflammatory, how can massage and body work support that symptom relief just beyond getting the knots out, I guess, if you will?
Yeah. So I think when most people think of massage, they just think of muscle and getting the muscles worked on. But there's multiple layers to body work. There's definitely a place for just working with muscle, and that being kind of the lens, and that's more like the spa experience or just like a relaxation experience. If that's what is needed in the moment, then that definitely has a place. But especially with, you know, any kind of arthritis condition, there's a big nervous system component. And that's really, I think, the more effective means by which we're communicating something to the body as far as relaxation or symptom improvement or management. We're trying to get the nervous system to downregulate so that we're not feeling so sensitized to those signals. So really just not just looking at what tissues are tight, but also what mood is the person in, where are they is in their stress cycle, and how can we work together to improve things on both fronts? Like, yeah, there might be tissue restrictions, but if somebody's stressed out and they just had a, you know, a stressful work meeting and they got kids and stuff going on at home, maybe they don't need homework and more stuff to do. Maybe they just need to relax for an hour and get into their body. That's another type of session that I do is somatic integration type work, which is getting out of the head and into the body. And sometimes that's going to be more effective than let's just dig in to the fascia and try to see what's restricted. And that can be uncomfortable. And if you're already in a lot of discomfort, maybe that's not the right direction clinically to go. So it really depends on how are they showing up, what's going on today. And what I often just ask, like, what sounds good to you? Because you might have signed up for a myofascial session, you know, a month ago. And then by the time you're coming in, today's not the day to be working in that kind of direction. Maybe today we're thinking more relaxation based, more embodiment based, more feeling what's present, sitting with that and processing that. And often we get a lot of symptom relief just through that connection, just through allowing, you know, emotions or other sensations to process and be fully felt. That can be a profound healing experience without needing to, you know, get into range of motion and stretching. And, you know, in other days when somebody's just like, yeah, I just need to feel better. This thing has been going on for months or years, or, you know, it's an old injury, or I had surgery here, or, you know, I have, you know, fusion in my discs from either a surgery or a condition. What can we do to get me to feel better? That's when I'll start looking through more clinical lens and be like, all right, let's see what are your current capabilities? How can we improve those? So it's more than just looking at muscle tissue and how can I massage that to make it feel good for an hour.
Yeah.
It's more about how can we take you as a whole and look at all of your articulations, all of your joints, maximize the function in the ones that do work well so that they can do more of the work, as opposed to expecting those like arthritic joints or immobile joints to have to, you know, try to pick up the slack. Because that's something else with, like, especially with spondyloarthritis, I don't treat that condition. I also don't treat something like sciatica because that's a diagnosis and I'm not a doctor. So I'm not treating that condition, but we can look at the function of joints. Like, I can't measure somebody's pain because I'm not in them. That's a, you know, a subjective kind of finding, but I can look at hip rotation. I can look at spinal rotation. I can look at shoulder movement. I can see those things and I can actually measure how this joint is working. And if we can improve those things, that's going to be an improvement to the whole system, as opposed to me, you know, trying to dig into an arthritic joint. So that's kind of,
I have a yoga teacher and we often talk about, especially he's well aware of my condition, and we talk often about finding the fulcrum in any position we're doing, which is kind of different for everybody, but it's how do you find the balance that starts to open up what might be closed, for lack of a better term. And then you get a flow going, right? You improve the system because maybe you opened up some piece of fascia that was preventing blood flow, or I think there's so much there. Okay, so can we play a game? Can you pretend like I'm a patient on intake and you're going to ask questions and then we're going to decide what to do with me?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, of course.
Let's do that. It's better than the step by step. Okay. So because I think some people don't have a fear around some of these things, in various ways. And I love it when we can tell our listeners what to expect when they get to a place. And I like to think if you've made it onto SpondyCast, you are a well-vetted, which I know the staff is great at this, you are a well-vetted practitioner of your domain expertise. So let's do it. I'm in your office.
Yeah, welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, David. It's good to be here.
Yeah. So how are you feeling today?
I'm feeling pretty good. You know, I have AS. I know I have non-radiographic, so nothing on the x-ray. But generally, I'm feeling sort of under a lot of stress and a lot of fatigue the last couple of days. I don't know if it's, you know, we're getting into fall. I've got a lot of stress at work. But I'm struggling a lot, particularly in like hips and back. I just feel like kind of heavy.
Heavy. Okay. And when you say you feel that stress, do you feel that in those specific places in the hips?
I'm feeling a lot of tightness in the hips despite stretching and some, you know, lower back pain. I have a shoulder thing that I can't seem to figure out how to resolve.
Okay.
Or it just, you know, doesn't move quite as much as I'd want it to.
Yeah. Okay. and in the hips, are they feeling tight all the time or specifically when you're moving?
All the time.
All the time. Okay.
Yeah.
And the lower back, is that also?
Yeah, I think there's a lot going on in that SI. You know, if you were my 17-year-old daughter who I make rub my lower back sometimes, you'd say like, oh, wow, your SI joint feels like rocks.
Feels like rocks. Okay. Yeah. So there's a lot of interplay between the hips and the back. So I generally in sessions, I want to start with a ground up approach. While the shoulder is important, I really think that working from kind of that base layer of the hips, getting the foundation working properly, that can relieve a lot of symptoms from there up, just because everything relies on the hips and how they're playing with the spine, especially the lumbar spine and sacrum there. So I would ask, is there anything that you do that makes it feel better, that you noticed made it feel good in the hips? Any kind of stretching, or if you've had body work in the past, is there anything that you really enjoyed that you would like to have happen again in this session?
Yeah, I think some of it is piriformis for sure, but I think that's almost like a secondary thing going on to the SI joint. Definitely opening up my hip flexors helps. Mm. I do a lot of like laying on a block on my SI joint.
Okay. Some decompression stuff.
Yeah. Decompression. I probably sit way too much, but I mean, you asked me about pain, but like the tightness is always there, but I generally feel better after moving. Ironically, I often feel better after running, but I think that's just like getting the mental part out.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really impossible to draw that distinction between, you know, the mind and the body. You know, if the body is the subconscious mind, we think of all of these things that are subconscious, right? Like the heart beating, the lungs extracting oxygen from the breath that we're taking, you know, our blood sugar levels, all that stuff is subconscious mind activity. But there's, I think, a common conception that the subconscious is like this ethereal cloud outside of our thoughts, where it's influencing what we're thinking. That might be part of it too, but we can also consider the subconscious as just all of the processes that are happening that we're not in a voluntary kind of role with, right?
Right.
You have all of these subconscious things that are happening, and that is the body. It's all communication that's happening there. So when you go for a run, you are working on that subconscious level and on the mind level, as well as the physical, obviously with physical exertion and exercise, right? Yeah. So that makes sense that that would feel better because you're kind of doing two things. You've got a, you know, a forked approach to how you're, you know, addressing the pain or the discomfort in the moment. So that's all another kind of big thing is the movement aspect, right? Mm-hmm. So we feel better with movement, especially with this condition in particular. From what I've seen with clients, the more movement they get, the better they tend to feel. And there's a lot of reasons for that from the biochemistry level that aren't super important to really dive into yet. But just on the gross anatomy level, just through movement, that's how I treat mostly. So a lot of my sessions for this in particular, or for anybody with chronic pain, it's not you just laying there and me digging into the piriformis.
Right.
And that distinction of like naming that area of tissue, the piriformis, that's really like an anatomy textbook kind of distinction. Because when you go through school and you look in cadavers, it's more of just a mess of connective tissue. And a thickening of one part of that connective tissue is designated as the piriformis. But muscles don't really function or exist statically. They exist through movement. So treatment should involve movement is my philosophy. So I'm not just going to be digging in looking for trigger points or, you know, tearing scar tissue or adhesions, which really is not what's happening anyway. It's a little bit too simplified of an understanding to think that we're breaking anything apart with manual therapy. The tensile strength of collagen is in the thousands of pounds realm. So it's very, very tough, very strong. We can influence that tissue, but it needs movement for that influence to really take hold. And then it needs consistency. So coming in to my office today, we're going to start this process of introducing movement to some structures that need that. But then it has to be a two-way street. So I'm going to introduce movement to some joints, to some tissues. We're going to introduce a very specific stress so that we get a specific adaptation in that tissue to that stress to better accommodate that stress. So that way, when you go to move and bend over and that piriformis is being stressed, it can accommodate that stress better, which means it's going to feel more flexible. It's going to feel stronger because we've worked on it through movement, not just through statically pushing on it. Because we don't want it to just feel good while you're on the table. I want you to get off the table, move that hip around, and be like, oh, it feels like what you just did is what I'm actually doing now. This is how it works in life, not just at rest on a table. Because that's my big thing is passive inputs yield passive results. So if we want an active result,
that is deep. That is deep.
We can unpack that a little bit.
Yeah, that is really deep. I do want to come back to that one. Cause I think like, and what you're describing too of all this tissue work is coming back up to your philosophy around systems, right? We have what, like 16 different systems in our bodies, like lymph system and limbic and this system. There's a bunch of systems. Yeah. And I always think of the human body as, I know this is a backwards way of looking at us, but I think of it like a processing line, like, or a giant like refinery system where you've got all these piping and everything's trying to move through properly. And what you're trying to do is clear some of the bottlenecks like that are preventing, you know, oil from getting from system A to system B. And I think we do hear a lot about like, we're going to move scar tissue and we're going to get things to stop being sticky. And, but I think that's a really cool, like I'm mesmerized by your approach. So I'm going to have to come to Boise. Okay. I want to come back to the passive piece, but I also don't want to not, touch on, you mentioned it a little bit, like somebody might book a deep tissue massage and then come in or whatever you guys call it. And I know you're not like a big, and then they get there and they're in a flare. And like you just move people, because I think flares are something that are so tricky. And you want to avoid the flare state, like getting out of control. But is that something that you can, you know, maybe, or it's like flare hypersensitivity. How do you approach that? Like, is that something you see a lot? I'm sure it happens.
It definitely happens. It's just, yeah, tricky with timing because we never know what stressor is going to set off, you know, that kind of reactive cascade in the body to where now we're really feeling what's going on. So again, it just comes down to asking how they're feeling that day and how can we make this feel good for today? Because maybe you wanted body work. That was what sounded good at the time, but now that you're here, or you might even be calling me beforehand, because I've had that plenty of times, like, hey, I'm actually having a flare up. We might have to cancel the session. And I'll say, I understand that. And if you want to do that, we can definitely reschedule. But if you want, we can also explore some other possibilities. Because I also have this, you know, this whole facet of what I do is mobility training. And that's not just about, you know, working on a specific tissue to get something to change. It can involve that, but it can also just be a movement practice to get this system-wide inflammation under control. Because just by moving what we can move, we're going to maintain the function. We're going to nourish the joints that can move.
Yeah.
And we're really training for longevity. That's my main goal. Of course, I'll train somebody for a squat or a deadlift, you know, with my athletes that I work with, if they want to be able to pitch, that requires very specific capabilities in the shoulder that are abnormal, because that's not a normal thing to do, to throw a 90 mile an hour fastball. So that's a specific application, but it also has the application of just getting us to feel a little bit more embodied and to maximize, again, the function that is possible. So a really simple thing might be if they show up and they get a flare up, you know, let's say in between me walking out of the room and then I come back in and they're on the table and they're like, I'm flaring up. And it's like, okay, let's start by, can you just move your neck? Can you move it around a little bit? And if one particular, you know, angle of movement is causing pain, let's just cut that out of the circle. So if you're to look at it from above, you know, someone doing a, you know, a neck circle might look like a perfect circle, but if there's a painful spot, we can draw more of like a Pac-Man kind of shape.
Yeah.
That we were just getting to that painful, get to the edge of where we're getting uncomfortable, move around that, and then continue the movement. And that way we're getting some parasympathetic activity to increase, which is the rest and digest system, just because we're not going into that pain, but we are embodied because we're very sensitive. We're feeling, what does my neck feel like? Just by getting into the body and sensing what's going on, we're going to get that rest and digest process kind of started, versus when we go into pain, we're getting that somatic, more fight or flight kind of response. And that can increase the symptoms of a flare or a hypersensitivity. So that's kind of the first thing, is just let's see what moves and where can it move without eliciting pain. And if it feels good just to move it around, maybe I can move it around a little bit. Maybe I can get into, you know, okay, today your hips are really flared up. What about your shoulder today? Can you move the shoulder around? Okay, you can move it that much. Maybe I can get in there. We can assess some of the shoulder stuff. And then using a gentle approach to that, instead of, you know, I'm not going to dig in and start doing, you know, deep, you know, fascial work on right. the shoulder. If you're having a flare up, we might just be doing really gentle stretching, some breathing, something that's going to make it feel good. Cause ultimately we want to improve your condition today, but also give you the tools to be continually improving it over time. So even if you're having a flare up, it doesn't mean you have no opportunity to improve the system today.
Yeah. So
want to take advantage of what you can do.
Yeah. I love that. I love that approach. And I think especially for people with spondyloarthritis, movement does help, right? For that's it, I get it banged into my head every time I go to the doctor or wherever I go,
yeah.
keep moving. Would you say, is there ever, like, if you are in a flare or you're not having a great day, if I heard you correctly, and I'll asterisk it with, like, probably always check your doctor if you have the question. But there really isn't a reason you can't do some level of body work if you're not feeling well or you're in a flare or sensitive.
Yeah. Obviously, there's always going to be special cases, so I won't speak to everyone's yeah. condition. Really depends on what's going on. But, you know, I've also worked in, like, the hospice setting. And there's people that are in a very delicate state at the end of life, and it might just be massaging their hands, you know, or their feet for a little while, just doing something
yeah.
that provides some level of relief just to downregulate the nervous system. Cause it can be really difficult to downregulate when all you can feel is the pain. So if we can give a different input and a different signal that takes the mind out of the area that is painful and uncomfortable, we can direct that attention towards a different part of the body. That's kind of two things. One, in the moment, we're providing relief just because we're able to focus on something else, but we're also developing a skill, which is to be able to titrate, to go between something that's really aggravating, go somewhere that's neutral or positive, and work with that for a little while. And that's just something outside of just the body or body work, but just yeah. dealing with emotions. This is more on, like, the somatic side again, but just dealing with emotional content or trauma or cell memory, repressed stuff that yeah. might be festering. Like, just being able to sit with that for a little bit and then go somewhere else that feels better, going back and forth, that has immense benefits in life, not just yeah. in the tissue level. But that would be one approach and maybe one piece of advice is like, yeah, even if you're in a flare, there is some level of movement, whether it's movement of your attention, movement of the breath, or actually movement of the physical body. I think that could be still effective at some level.
Okay, so we're going to go, and we talked a little bit, I mean, I think all of this kind of sums up conscious body work, right?
Yeah, I'd say just being a little more invested in the whole person, not just on, oh, here's a tight hamstring. Let's just treat a tight hamstring.
Right. It's like, right.
Is this tight because of A, B, C, D? You know, how is it affecting the whole system? Yeah.
Yeah. And one thing I want to unpack, I still want to go back to the passive comment, but we're going to save that maybe for the end. Or you'll have to come back and we'll just have to have a whole hour on it. Mobility training. You offer mobility training, which I think we touched at the top of the hour, but I think this is something that's really important if you have spondyloarthritis or any, as we age, right? We'll lean on our aging next friends. How does mobility training work? And maybe this is where we unpack the passive piece because it complements the body work, I think. And you call it calm, coordinated, and connected. Like what is so unique about that compared to other just like, I'm gonna turn on my YouTube and stretch?
Yeah, this is a great segue to the passive input being a passive result. So
see, if I'd read the questions ahead, I could have predicted that.
No, it's great. So yeah, with mobility work right now, and honestly with strength training as well, there's a lot of stuff on the internet. And it's kind of there's two things. It's like information overload. So we're just doing one thing a little bit and then jumping on to the next thing, doing that a little bit. It doesn't work right away. So we jump on to the next thing. Or there's analyzation paralysis, where there's just too much and we cannot figure out what the right thing to do is. So we do nothing. And I think a lot of people fall into that category because it's like, I got this shoulder. It is immobile. It doesn't do, you know, overhead movements. Every time I go up there, I get pain. So I just don't do that anymore. And I don't know how to do mobility work there because every time I try to move it, it just hurts. So that's when it's really helpful to have, you know, a professional look at it and go through this kind of education process for like, what does it mean to mobilize this tissue? Because it doesn't mean just getting into, you know, like the YouTube stuff, like a runner's lunge and just bopping in and out of that, or getting on a foam roller for a couple minutes and just rolling around. That might have its place. Because again, if we're just going after parasympathetic nervous system activity, we just want to downregulate, maybe foam rolling and doing some light stretching, yoga. That stuff can be great in that context. But if we're trying to improve the function and actually mobilize that joint, increase the usable range of motion, it takes very specific work to do that. And that's why the passive inputs, like a foam roller, even though there's an active component where we're moving around, it's still not engaging the tissue. We're not telling that tissue to contract or to adapt to something. We're essentially just doing a massage for that tissue with foam rolling. And then same thing with like dynamic stretching or a dynamic warm-up. That does get blood flowing through the tissue, but it's only going to essentially warm up the tissue that is already functional. But if you have a dysfunctional, you know, section of a tissue, or, you know, we have some scarring or fibrosis in a tendon, then it's not going to fix that. We have to do specific active inputs to get a specific active result from that tissue. So the way I kind of phrase it to people when they first come in is like, the body is very ergonomic. It's just trying to conserve energy. So if we don't use something, it's going to atrophy and it's going to become tougher and dehydrated essentially on the inside, the ground substance around the cells. That's going to get dehydrated because we're not stressing it. The stress on the cells makes them request nutrients. So if we're not stressing a tissue, it's not asking for nutrients, it's going to wither away, get fibrotic, get tough, and then it becomes immobile. So this is why everybody can do the splits when they're born. You know, babies can all do the splits. Not many people can do the splits when they're in their 30s or 40s and on, right?
Yeah.
And the reason for that is because we don't get into the splits after a certain age. We kind of stop doing that movement. One, because it's a very specific movement that doesn't have much utility. Like, we're not doing a lot of activities from the splits as a 5, 7, 10-year-old, unless you're, you know, a gymnast, right?
Right.
And that's kind of the perfect example is, like, if you are continually using a range of motion and stressing those lines of tension over and over again, then your body will maintain that tissue's health. But because that is not used for most people, we lose the ability to access that tissue. So mobility work for something like the splits, since we're talking about it, if we really need the capability for that, we have to convince the body that it's necessary, that it's going to spend resources on maintaining that tissue's health. So that doesn't mean just getting into the splits and just trying to go deeper and deeper. Again, that's a passive thing. And we can passively improve the ability for a tissue to stretch. That doesn't mean it's going to work well when we're actually trying to use that tissue under load.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a lot of,
no, that's a lot
of information. But
I mean, I always think of, like, have this sort of like philosophy of, like, when you're trying to do something to build a little strength, but you have to be like stretching and engaging at the same time, which we could go around and around on this one. But you're right. I do have a question though. How much of immobility or like limited mobility do you think at times, you probably have way better data on this. I think there's the atrophy piece. I think there's lack of use. We've all been through. How much of it do you think is sometimes like just fear of like moving it? Like, and you touch on it, like we have to connect with our mind to get the body to move. And is that fear, or is that, I often use the phrase, once you have a thought, if you let it, it starts to think for itself.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Because we can personify a little bit with like the shoulder, and we could say like that the nervous system is afraid to move into a certain range of motion if we never use that range of motion. If we never get into that position, then there's going to be some bracing. There's going to be some apprehension in the tissue from the nervous system level, just because it's getting into like a new experience, basically. It's going into a place where, okay, these tissues are not used to accommodating this type of stress at this particular angle. So the drive, that signal from our nervous system to the motor units in that tissue is going to be kind of weak because that connection has not been very well established. So there is like a real kind of fear, and it might even be felt in the body as a type of apprehension or fear about certain movements. And that can be from pain. We're guarding from pain. So there's going to be apprehension. There's going to be, you know, spasm. There's going to be some sort of physical recoil from going into a certain direction. And then there can just be the lack of experience, which is going to feel, again, it's going to feel weak and kind of shaky. It's going to feel like I can't go there. And again, it's just the nervous system has no information about that particular point in space.
Right.
The joints aren't communicating how we move through this angle or this range because we just never go there. So,
or it might have information from a previous experience.
Yeah. It's like walking through a city that you're unfamiliar with. It's like, I don't really know how to navigate here. I don't know how to get around. I don't know how to move through this place. Like, I know that street. Okay. I'm just going to go to that street. That's exactly how these like pathways for movement are developed in our body. It's like, I know to get to the coffee shop, I got to go down this street and then this street. It's actually a super long way to get there, super inefficient, but that's how I know how to get there. So that's how I'm going to do it. So if that's like the shoulder, I only know how to get my shoulder up by doing this weird kind of compensation movement with my spine, right? That's a pretty common one, is if we don't have the information to navigate a certain movement, then the rest of our body is going to kind of figure it out. It's like, okay, the objective is to get the hand overhead. I can do that by just flexing my spine in this weird way. And then that becomes the movement, because that's the pathway that's been strengthened. So then we get compensations. And that's kind of part of your question, I think, is like, how does immobility kind of contribute to a lot of these like painful conditions? And I think it's a lot of that. It's not just that the joint being immobile is painful, but it's the rest of the body picking up the slack. You know, a better example might be something like a squat, which a lot of people do use. It's like, if you can't do a squat, if you don't have, let's say, the right amount of ankle flexion, then your knee is going to try to behave like an ankle. And if your knee doesn't have the requisite motion to be a knee, then your hip and your lower back are going to try to become more like a knee. They're going to do jobs that they're not really designed to do. So that's how we get compensation.
Yeah. So, and then we get hurt.
Undue stress. Yeah. Cause then you've got an undue amount of stress on structures that are only supposed to support movement in specific planes of motion. Right. So then you're introducing all these other stresses, and that can create other issues. So that's why when you first came in and you said you've got lower back stuff going on, my first instinct is not to dig into your SI joint and your lower back to just make that feel better. I'm thinking immediately, what's going on in the toes, in the ankle, at the knee, and at the hip? And can we get that femur to rotate within the acetabulum? Can we improve that function with mobility work? Can we actually build a hip? Instead of saying like a squat is not a hip building exercise, but you do need a hip to do a squat. That's kind of the golden rule there. Is that like, you do need a functional hip to squat. Just doing a squat is not going to make you have a squat. It's probably going to ruin your lower back or your knees or your ankles. The stuff that doesn't have the prerequisites to do that motion, those are the things that are going to experience aberrant amounts of tension. And that's what's going to create kind of these other problems. So that's, again, looking at like the whole system as opposed to like somebody comes in and it's just their piriformis acting up. It's like, okay, what's going on in your hamstrings, in your hip, in your knee?
Yeah, for sure.
Where are the capabilities of all these joints? So again, to tie it back into to spondy conditions, like if you have stuff going on in your spine and you've got a lot of flare-ups going on there, I'm going to first think, okay, I'm not going to be treating your spine because I'm not treating spinal arthritis. Like I'm going to think, how can we improve the function of your hip so that any of this stress or tension that you're experiencing that might be coming from the hip can get resolved or improved.
Right.
Because if I can only, you know, improve the function of things that I can measure, kind of again to understanding systems. It's like, this is a very complex system and I have to break it down into these small pieces. It's like, I can look at the ankle. I can see, how does this ankle move? Okay. It doesn't move correctly this way. I know that has a pattern of compensation on the opposite side hip. So if you have hip pain on this side, I'm thinking, well, maybe it's this ankle over here that's actually creating this kind of chain reaction to pain.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure the right side of my SI joint is why my left shoulder hurts.
I've seen it. I've definitely seen it.
Let me ask you this, because I think our time is coming to an end, but I could talk to you all day. In the mobility work, and for people with spinal arthritis, many of us go on to live long lives, just like everybody else. But I'm curious, I just came off of a couple days. We worked on footwork and stability, just how do you stand and what do the different parts of your foot and what do they support in your body? And was fascinating, especially for this conversation. But as someone, and one of the stats that came up was once you're over, 65 and you have a fall, there's a very high likelihood of not recovering from that fall for many people. In the work you do, what are a couple things people can do very basically in your approach that help them with longevity in this ability to be calm and connected and coordinated? Did I get that right?
Yeah. I think one of the first things that stands out to me, and kind of just to tie into what you were talking about with stability in the foot, is posture. Because a lot of people will come in and they say like, oh, I've got a desk job and my back hurts. And it's because of that. It's because my posture sucks and I'm slouching and all of this, you know, posture related pain. And so there's kind of two things. It's like the first thing that's simple that anybody can do is just reframe how they're thinking about posture and its effect on how we feel, essentially. Because the spine, you know, it's got all these discs and they're all displacing pressure. And if we stack them in this kind of militant straight up and down, you know, what's kind of sold to us as good posture is really just our approximation of anatomic position, which is just a way to look at the body. Does not mean that the discs want to support our body weight in the same place all day long. Because if you think about it, we also have asymmetry. You know, everybody's got a little bit of, you know, biodiversity. So every disc might be shaped a little bit differently in different people. They're not all perfectly, you know, round, or our vertebrae might be tilted one way or the other. So sitting straight up and down, we might actually be compressing the same part of the disc all the time, which over time degenerates. And then we get, you know, nerve kind of irritation because now our perfect posture is irritating nerves because we're not moving. So the first thing that I would say is understanding posture. The best posture is one that is moving pretty consistently as opposed to sitting straight up. It's like, yeah, if you want to slouch, if your body's giving you the instinct to do that, it's because it's telling you take pressure off of this part of my disc. And then when that gets uncomfortable, yeah, slouch the other way for a couple minutes and until that feels uncomfortable, and then sit up, move things around, contract the core a little bit, give the body constant feedback. That way we're actually lubricating those discs and nourishing those joints throughout the day. So it's not that sitting is the problem. It's the lack of doing anything else.
Yeah, so exactly.
I have to sit a lot right now. I'm in school and I'm sitting a lot studying and doing stuff at the computer, but then I go and I do massage, you know, so I'm moving a lot for that part of my life. And I don't have kind of the typical postural issues as far as like lower back pain or neck pain, stuff like that. It's because I know that if I want my body to feel good consistently, it has to move consistently. So that's kind of the first thing that anybody can do is when you're thinking about posture, think about how much your spine can move and how much it wants to move to stay healthy.
Yes.
And then the other thing that's really simple is kind of what we touched on earlier is that kind of somatic embodiment piece, being able to sense into what's happening in our body. And I think just one helpful practice that I've found is instead of getting very conceptual about what I'm feeling, it's like, oh, I'm feeling pain or I'm feeling anxiety or, you know, sadness or anger, whatever. Those are all concepts, but the tactile sensation, we can tap into like, what does it actually feel like? Is it like the game of 20 questions? Is it heavy? Is it bigger than a loaf of bread? Is it a cloud? Is it solid? Does it move if I sit with it? That is just a regulating kind of
thing. You're right. And like when we label it, we judge it.
Exactly. And then we don't go any further with the feeling. We get into abstraction.
This is why I asked about Buddhism earlier.
Yeah. They definitely tie in. It's been a heavy influence for me, certainly.
No, that's fascinating.
Just because it's, you know, that's one way of integrating, understanding like what's happening in the body, maybe doesn't have these realities in the abstract realm, as far as I'm feeling this way because somebody said something to me and now I'm upset. It's like, yeah, that's the story about it. But what does the feeling actually do? The feeling itself is neutral. Like a soup that is hot is not an angry soup, you know? But when we feel that sensation in our chest or in our belly, it's like, oh, that's anger. It's like, that might be a helpful way to navigate the spectrum of emotions from the surface. But as soon as you dive into that, there's this neutral quality that hotness has, or that, you know, the kind of maybe smoky, vaporous tiredness emotion can feel. Like, I feel tired. What does tired feel like? Like, what does it actually feel like?
It's Oh, it's, you know, and it's, we did an episode on fatigue, and it was a guy who did fatigue research his whole career. And for me, it was probably the most moving hour I've spent in the last 125 episodes or whatever we've done, because he helped me to understand fatigue in a way that I think only people with our disease can. Yeah, it was like, oh, this is what it is. And no, it gets very interesting. So I don't want to make you late for whatever you've got next. So the last piece, I have two questions. And I'm going to tee them up and I'm going to let you land the plane. But first, I want to tell you that I am super grateful for humanity that you found your path, because it is very rare to speak to someone who really understands the body as a system. And I'm jealous of people in Boise, because being on the journey with a practitioner like you is the kind of stuff that is life-changing. And I've been lucky enough to have had some of those folks in my life. And I will often say many times that people like you save lives. And so I'm grateful you found your way out of oil changes and into Manta. So my last two questions, and I'll let you land the plane, are about intentional movement and how that can help people dealing with spondyloarthritis or joint fusion. And then last, you know, what is your wish for anyone who walks into your office, and like brought more broadly what people should know about how amazing the human body can be when we are intentional with it?
Good questions. But yeah, just to from oil changes to life changes. That's kind of the
that's your book.
That's the tagline right there. Yeah. And something else I wanted to say too is like, it feels great to be, you know, to be thanked for like my role, but you might resonate with this, you know, being from a place that made you want to go somewhere else. Like, it also didn't feel like much of a choice. Like, I fell into this. It's kind of just like, that's, I found myself here doing this because there wasn't another choice. It's like, I couldn't have an office job. I could not do these other things. This was the only thing, as opposed to it looking like, you know, oh, I sacrificed making a bunch of money to do this work because it's more important. It's like, no, this is the only thing that I have a real interest in that I can commit myself to. Yeah. So it just feels like in a complex system, if the earth is an organism, like I'm this specialized kind of cell, this is just what I do.
This is your function in the system.
It's my function. Yeah. And I've tried many times to get out of this function, but I just, things just repel me and I come back to it. I'm like, this is okay. Apparently I love this.
I think that's real. It's a real thing.
Yeah. And it just came down to, you know, understanding, what was it that really excited me? And it was this process of understanding systems. And I think that's kind of how we can segue into like intentional movement. It's like, if we want to understand our body better, we have to have a simple way of doing it, because it's a very complex system. Like you said, we've got the endocrine system and circulatory system, respiratory. We've got all these systems working in this wild kind of coordination. And it's very difficult to just approach and understand. But if we can do something very simple, like just moving my wrist around, moving my hip around, I can get some information that's easily digestible. And that's kind of the intentional thing, is not just moving because it's healthy for me, but moving to discover what's actually here, moving to build a relationship with this part of my body, instead of looking at it as like, this meat wagon that I have to carry around is just causing me so many problems, and this back thing is just killing me. It's like, can we connect to that? Can we talk to that? Can we develop this kinesthetic relationship with it? Because we can't just speak to it like a person and get an answer. The way that we have to communicate is visceral. It's got to be this intentional movement and a listening in our body for a response. And I think that's my goal for anybody coming into the office, is just to improve their relationship with themselves, because I'm not there to fix them. I'm there to get their body connected as a whole, all the pieces, all the systems, to get that connected a little bit better so that they feel more integrated in their physical body. So again, that might look like just relaxing. It might look like helping them to improve their function, but ultimately their body is doing the healing. I'm not a healer. I'm not, you know, a magician or a wizard. I'm just somebody that can introduce you to this part of the body, teach you how to speak with it, and teach you how to listen to it as well. So that's really my goal, is just to get people to feel like their relationship is improving with their physical body.
That you landed that plane like Sully on the Hudson, man. That was beautiful. I'm just going to say thank you for joining us. And I do hope you will come back. I have 1,000 questions I could ask you. But thank you. And I'm so glad we got connected.
Yeah, I'd love to do it again. I could talk forever. So
about this stuff. Yeah,
let's do it.
Awesome. Thank you.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie.
Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.